This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, SeavillePodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler joins us on occasion from Charlottesville Tomorrow, SeavilleTomorrow.com. Would give us an update on local politics and growth and development issues here in Central Virginia. The website, SeavilleTomorrow.com. What's the latest?
Big happenings yesterday, Coy, in the city and the county. Sean Tubbs, my colleague, was busy covering the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. That, of course, is the body that brings together and sometimes sets apart the city and the county. But the idea is we have this joint authority to do water and sewer in the community. And they had a board meeting yesterday. Mayor Norris is now a member of that board. And each locality has three seats on the board. Am I counting the right? I think I'm counting it right. Three seats. And then there's one at-large person, more or less, that's agreed upon by both localities. So Mr. Norris is a new member for representing city council, and he had some big business to bring up last night.
Yeah.
And that was he wants a new study done on the water demand. This would impact the 50-year water supply plan.
The infamous demand analysis.
Infamous demand analysis.
Which, for folks who are just joining us, what is that?
That is basically the projection that set up the framework for the 50-year plan. It says, how much water are we going to need in 50 years? Puts a line on the graph, and then you figure out how much water we think we're going to have if we don't do anything, right?
Right.
And then that difference, that gap, is how much water you need to build capacity for in
right.
your plan.
So the demand analysis looks at the growth,
projection
of people, businesses,
population.
Whoever is going to use the water.
Right.
And then it looks at, you know, the water supply and figures out, will that meet the need? Now, we have a demand analysis already on the table, right?
We do. It was done in 2004, and it projected by Gannett Fleming that we would need 18.7 million gallons in 50 years. Today, we're using about 9.1 million gallons, so over twice as much water that we're using today is what they projected in 50 years. Mayor Norris wants this looked at again, afresh, with a new set of eyes that looks at the current trend since 2004. He said, you know, let's not start over, but he said there are three things he wants looked at. How much have we really been using since 2004? Let's get some data on conservation measures. How much has the city been able to conserve and plug holes, frankly, in their existing infrastructure? And then what land use decisions, particularly in the county, have been made that may impact those projections. He cited the Biscuit Run development, that being taken off the table. He said, you know, maybe the county doesn't need as much water as it thought it would.
It was going to be the largest suburban development, the largest neighborhood in the history of Central Virginia. It was approved. It was green-lighted. They were ready to go. The economy tanked. The housing bubble burst. That big proposed neighborhood becomes a park, a state park. So you got to factor that into the metrics now and maybe redo the demand analysis.
That said, the people that say that are often the ones who want that demand analysis to be much lower because they want to build a smaller water supply. I would point out, Coy, that we've reported that when Dave Slutsky, Supervisor Dave Slutsky, who's no longer on the Board of Supervisors, but when he and Dave Norris were in a public forum February 2008, I want to say, Dave Slutsky was the one saying, you know what, I think we may have ignored evidence that we've lowballed water needs and they ignored things in our master plans. So if David Slutsky was still involved in this, I think he would say 2004 is a good year. You know why it's a good year? That's when Albemarle County started doing master planning. And he would say, particularly in places 29, the Northern Corridor, there's a whole lot more capacity for people than Gannett Fleming and their predecessors, who looked at the comp plans from 1997, realized.
Right.
So I think you have to look at it from both sides. This number could go up or down.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens now? I mean, that was approved by the board, this request for
a
new demand analysis?
It's interesting, Coy. They didn't want to spend a lot of money getting to an answer. And Mayor Norris doesn't want to spend a lot of money. He just wants a quick and dirty, you know, give me a better estimate that's more realistic that I can hang my hat on. And he basically said, city council's not moving an inch until you give us that what we want.
Yeah. And because that's really what's driving all of this, is this study that says you need X amount of water.
Well,
and then everything's working backwards from that.
Right. I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
But the city has also demanded for other studies of the dams in question. So there are a number of studies now. The reason this is going to be interesting over the next couple months, Coy, is that as we get more information about the dams proposed to be built, what Tom Frederick at the RWSA is saying is, hey, the dam we're using today, the Lower Ragged Mountain Dam built in 1908, is still operating under what's called a conditional certificate because of dam safety issues and concerns. And he is scheduled to go in front of people in Richmond, the dam safety experts, in August to say where this community is. They've been giving us extensions since 1978 when they first started raising concerns about the safety of that dam. And so Tom Frederick, I think, is feeling a little under the gun to have an answer. And the answer he used to give them was, we have a water plan. It was approved. We're going to build a new dam. Don't worry about the old one. Now Mayor Norris is saying, hey, wait a minute, there are a few more things we need to study before we know what our water plan is. And so Tom Frederick, I think, is saying, you know what, I'm not sure how to accomplish what you want me to do. You're only giving me $30,000 to do it. But, you know, we'll do the best we can and try to meet your expectations. But Mayor Norris drew a line in the concrete, I guess I would say, and said, you know what, if we have to spend a few million dollars to fix the existing dam while I'm waiting for this information, we will do that.
And his point, ultimate point being, I suppose, that if we can avoid spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a new reservoir, then it's money well spent to try to avoid that.
Yeah, I think that's the argument he would make.
Yeah, we're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of this hour, get a local news update and a weather report. Going to be beautiful tomorrow. A little bit chilly tonight. Not as cold as last night, but beautiful tomorrow. Yeah, up in the mid-70s, lots of sunshine. Going to be really, really pretty. Brian, when we get back, we'll talk about...
I like to call the Matrix.
The Matrix. All
this
right.
This is what I was busy with in the city of Charlottesville last night.
The Matrix coming up in just a few minutes with Brian Wheeler. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. We're talking about your community and the money you spend here as a citizen of the county and the city. We're live and local. This is where Charlottesville comes to talk. This is Charlottesville right now. I'm Coy Barefoot. It's 28 after 4. Four thirty-four on the clock. It's 60 degrees in Central Virginia. My name's Coy Barefoot. This is Charlottesville right now. News Radio 1070 WINA. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour at 5:08, market, be there. Herman Schwartz from the University of Virginia's Department of Politics. His latest book is Subprime Nation. He'll be live in studio talking about proposed Wall Street regulation reforms and what in the heck's going up? What in the heck's going on with Goldman Sachs? All that in the 5 o'clock hour. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org. What is The Matrix besides a really good movie that I could watch over and over? The Matrix is like Goodfellas, you know, like a movie that I could see just over and over and over again and never get tired of it.
You and I should never live together, Coy, because we would not get anything done.
You agree, right?
I agree. I mean,
those are classic movies.
If I'm clicking through DirecTV and I see The Matrix, I'm locked in on it. And Jean walks in the room and she's like, oh God, here we go again. Can you turn the channel?
And the same thing with the sequel, Matrix Revolutions.
Oh, I can watch all of them.
They're fantastic.
I love them.
Where did they go? Why did they just stop? I mean, if they kept making them, I'd go see every one of them. I would buy the DVD.
I'm sure it'll come back.
Do you do Netflix? Are you a Netflix guy?
Yes.
And you've gotten the...
Our queue is currently empty, they tell me.
Oh, because so you said your kids changed the queue around, right?
They do. Well, see, one of the reasons it's empty is they don't like my selection, so I've sort of...
They go in and delete them and take them out of the queue?
Well, no, it's worse, Corey. They let them arrive, and then they just set them on the shelf and give me a hard time about it.
Deja.
They're like, why did you pick that movie?
What's an example of a movie that you would like that your kids would turn their nose up to?
Oh, I don't know.
Goodfellas? Well, you can't let them watch that.
Yeah, we couldn't let them watch that. But that would be an example of one I might order.
Yeah.
And then Gene would say, Brian, we can't let the kids watch that.
No, you really can't. It's a good one, though.
So,
now, what is Central Virginia's Matrix?
Central Virginia is the city of Charlottesville's Matrix. All right, I'm going to try to explain this and it's complicated, but it's important.
You know, it's about alternate realities.
Let me start with why it's important. This is the zoning matrix in the city.
The zoning matrix.
It basically governs all the uses you can think of to do on property in the city of Charlottesville.
Business, residential.
Adult daycare, bed and breakfast, convent monastery.
Yeah.
Criminal,
do we have any of those?
Criminal justice facility.
We don't have any convents, do we?
I don't think we do.
We need a convent. And drive-through Chinese.
Here's a good one.
Maybe we could do the both, combine them. Listen, a convent that serves drive-through Chinese.
Here's one of my favorites.
That's an idea.
The Night Watchman's Dwelling Unit.
What the heck is that?
You can have a...
Is it a shack? Like an old photomat?
Here's a term you may not have heard. A manufactured home park.
A mobile home park, yeah.
Yeah, but they call it manufactured home park.
Oh, they're called manufactured homes now,
not mobile homes. So anyway, there's this long list of things you can do on property that's residential, commercial, industrial.
Yeah.
And the city staff and the planning commission are trying to take a fresh look at it and say, do we still believe in all these things in all these places? Have we got the right list and the right uses? And do they require the right level of review? Because that's the important thing for the public. They'll see something getting built next door and they'll say, how on earth did that happen?
Yeah, and why isn't that a convent? Because they can sing, boy.
Right.
Those nuns can sing.
And make baked goods.
And baked goods? We need a convent.
But anyway, so they've been really trying to talk about it in a attractive way, like I just did.
You know,
get people excited about it.
Very
this.
Attractive.
But the problem is nobody's showing up at these meetings. And so I was at the last meeting in mid-April.
You gotta serve food.
April 12th, I'm there. The clock hits 9:15, time to open up the public workshop on the zoning matrix. I was the only one there.
You're kidding.
I was the only person in City Hall. And of course, they look out. They can't. They don't. You know, I'm media, so I'm off on the side there.
Yeah.
I'm not on camera.
So it's just you over in that little place where the journalists sit, and then an empty audience in City Hall.
Now, that wasn't last night. That was mid-April. So instead of having the workshop, because nobody was there to talk to, they basically, Jason Pearson, the chairman, who's trying to do the right thing here, he said, this is really important. If you're watching on TV and you just didn't come, here's why it's important. And I interviewed him this week. I said, Jason, why is it important? And he said, well, Brian, think about Belmont. Think about the noise ordinance in Belmont, those types of restaurant uses near residential. I said, okay, that's a good example. Give me another one. He said there was a bed and breakfast approved off of JPA right across from UVA on the Oakhurst Circle.
Yeah, I know where that is.
And the neighbors didn't know a bed and breakfast could even go in there. But now they're neighbors to, what's going to be a bed and breakfast. So those are two examples of where people may be surprised to be living next to something.
Who's doing this? The Planning Commission?
The Planning Commission. They will make recommendations to City Council.
Could it change?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what this is all about.
They can change anything.
They're reviewing the way we zone property in Charlottesville.
Right.
And the way the city decides what you can do on certain properties.
Yeah. If you thought a night watchman's dwelling unit should be by right on every piece of residential property
Absolutely.
In the city, then you'd come to the public workshop and talk about that. Now, two people came last night.
Good for them.
Kay Slaughter, who is...
Former mayor.
And she had some feedback for the commission. And then Peter Hedlund, representing the Fry Springs Neighborhood Association. And Peter just
Very jumped, active association.
Very active. And he jumped right in and said, I'm concerned about accessory units. So if you wanted to rent out your basement to somebody.
Yeah. Or the shack in your backyard to a grad student.
And one of the things...
Or a night watchman.
And they're talking about... That might be different. They're talking about having you come down and fill out a form to say that you're doing that.
And right now you don't?
Right now you don't have to do that.
You can just do it what you want.
Do it. And so he was asking questions about that. And the neat thing, Coy, I would say about the workshop was this format was a good idea because it allowed back and forth. It wasn't just the 3-minute public hearing. You get your 3 minutes and then they listen to you and they don't say anything, right?
Right.
This was a back and forth, come sit at the table. Now, we were in a very small conference room in City Hall. So in some ways, it's a good thing a lot of people didn't come. I will say I got a little heat from the city today. They didn't like the way the article might have been perceived.
They gave Brian Wheeler a hard time?
They did. They thought I sort of undersold how well they'd been advertising this meeting. They sent out 1,000 emails. They've been talking about it at past meetings, et cetera. I had to point out, though, it was not on the website. It wasn't on the city's calendar, wasn't on the city planning commission's calendar, wasn't on the zoning matrix website.
Yep.
So there were some snafus. The other snafu,
they need a website, the Seville Matrix.
The other snafu, Coy, was the building got locked at some point during the meeting because because I left to go get a little snack.
You couldn't get back in?
I couldn't get back in.
Brian, that's awful.
So I don't,
and they're supposed to be having a public meeting and the doors are locked?
Now, my guess is not many people tried after the point I left the
meeting. Left hand? Here's the right hand.
I'm just saying, good practices, public meetings, keep the doors open.
Yeah, that would help people get into the building, actually, and attend the meeting.
But in all seriousness, the commissioners take this as a very important part
of
their,
I mean, we're just joking around. There's clearly people who are really committed and serving the public.
So don't give up hope.
And this is huge. This is a big deal.
You can still provide input. The city, if you go to the website, look for the zoning matrix, you will find a website devoted to this topic. You can download all the important documents. But also you can send them an email or a phone call and let them know what you think about it or what your question is. They're going to have a public hearing May 11th at the Planning Commission, and then they'll wrap up the recommendations on the residential zoning matrix. Later this summer, we're going to be talking about commercial and industrial zoning. Some of the commissioners I talked to, Coy, said when you hit those topics and maybe get into some of the mixed-use developments, the ones that are more intense and may impact neighbors more, that people will start coming out and talking about things.
Yeah, that's true, of course.
So we're just sort of
getting
the ball rolling on
this. So right now, just to back up for a minute, we're talking with Brian Wheeler. The phone lines are always open for you at 977-1070. Your thoughts? Join the conversation. So right now, if you want to rent out your basement apartment to a grad student at UVA, you can do that. No questions asked. You just put an ad in the paper.
I think there's a ordinance related to how many unrelated people can be in one house. And I'm not an expert on these.
Yeah, well, that's to avoid impromptu, like fraternity houses out in some neighborhood.
Right.
But you don't have to get city permission or anything. You don't even have to let the city know you're doing it. But one of these proposals you're saying could be that you would have to get permission or at least...
That you have to notify them that you are doing it.
Yeah.
Now, I think people...
I don't think the libertarians are going to be happy with that.
I think people doing it already would be grandfathered. But if you had a new idea, hey, I want to put,
Yeah. We fixed up that little apartment over the garage. We're going to turn that into a little revenue stream there.
And the staff were careful to point out they didn't, this wasn't intended to be, onerous and deter people, but more to help them keep track. Because when they get phone calls from the neighbor next door saying, oh, there are five cars always parked in my neighbor's driveway and they overflow out onto the street and take up all the parking.
It's full of night watchmen. Yeah.
The city staff want to be able to look in their little database and say, oh, don't worry about it. It's completely legit. So-and-so's leasing it to so-and-so.
I get
That's what they're trying to, I think, prepare for.
Yeah.
Those kinds of questions.
Interesting. Very interesting. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, the Matrix in the city of Charlottesville. What's the latest on the Meadow Creek Parkway, Brian, before we let you go?
So since I was on your little show, Coy, I heard from Peter Kleeman. He walked in my office with a letter he had just received from the Supreme Court of Virginia. Not many people get those letters. And in fact, not many people get to talk to the judges the way Peter Kleeman did. Peter Kleeman, of course, is an opponent of the Meadow Creek Parkway, although as he has pointed out on my website in a comment to this story, he would like to be known as a supporter of McIntyre Park primarily, and not an opponent of the road.
Yeah.
But
a save the park advocate.
Be that as it may, his lawsuit was related to a piece of land that's involved in the county's portion of the Meadow Creek Parkway. So this was city-owned land. This was the whole supermajority vote.
Yeah, I remember that.
People challenged whether there were enough votes by city council to transfer that land to VDOT for the road to be built.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court wrote back to Mr. Kleeman and said they would not hear his case on a technicality, that it wasn't filed on a timely basis. Mr. Kleeman was a little upset that
Welcome to Virginia.
They didn't get to hear the merits of the case or have that argued. And so now...
That's a little ridiculous, though, isn't it? I mean, just to pause here for a minute. Isn't it ridiculous?
Well,
they're not even looking at the merits of the case. And I'm not saying, he's right or wrong. That's not the point here. The point is the Supreme Court, the final legal voice, is saying we will not decide on a controversial legal issue because you didn't file your case in time. That's like saying somebody on death row has, DNA evidence to exonerate them. And no, we can't accept that because you didn't file it in time by the deadline.
Well, I think these matters happen all the time in courts. Sometimes people sue the wrong entity and a case gets thrown out.
Yeah.
So that's another example.
But then they can always go back and sue the right entity.
They can.
Assuming they made some deadline.
You know, what I thought was interesting, and I asked Peter this, I said, well, Peter, if it was late, why did they call you up on the phone and let you argue with them for 6 minutes? You know, why don't they have a little checklist that says, should we even be bothering with this or not? You know, was it filed on a timely basis? Yes.
Did the judges call him?
The judges called him. He talked to a three.
Really?
He talked to a
Peter,
three.
Peter, this is Judge Thomas over here, Virginia Supreme Court.
He talked to a three-judge
panel. You filed too late, young man.
Well, they didn't call him to tell him that. They called him to hear the merits. They set up a scheduled phone call with him to hear the merits of the case, and then they said, okay, we'll get back to you.
And then
they wrote him a letter and said, oh, sorry, you didn't file in time.
God, that's crazy. Right hand, meet left hand. Goodness gracious. So why would they waste their time doing that in the first place?
I don't make this stuff up, Coy. I just report the facts.
So that phone call didn't matter at all?
It didn't matter at all.
You think that the second phone call would have come first.
Now, what I wonder, Coy, is if Peter had said something that was so, and he's a smart man, but if he'd said something so legally brilliant, and he's not a lawyer, he's an engineer.
But he's a smart guy.
But if he had said something so legally brilliant that it got their attention, I wonder if they would have overlooked the, you know, timeliness of the submission.
Yeah, that's very curious.
I don't know the answer to that.
That's very curious.
Because I'm not a lawyer either.
So, but for folks who are listening and think that this means an end to all the legal objections to the Meadow Creek Parkway.
Good point.
Hold on, because that's not the message of this story.
This is not the big lawsuit.
That was the tiny little...
That was the tiny little lawsuit.
Yeah.
That was a little flare-up on the...
Right. The big one is yet to come.
The big one's yet to come. It'll be a federal lawsuit if they have to file it.
And they have a case. I'm telling you.
And the case,
I've talked to lawyers. They really do have a case.
Case has to do with segmentation, breaking this into three projects, the interchange, the city's portion, the county's portion. The allegation is they've done that to avoid federal environmental standards and reviews. And and the feds maintain that each project has its own independent utility and can be built on its own and be helpful to the community.
Right. Yeah, like the road through the park that ends in a cul-de-sac in the middle of a park. Yeah, right.
I'm just saying. That's what they said.
I don't buy that for 1 minute.
We're waiting right now. What the Coalition to Preserve MacIntyre Park is waiting for is for the permits to be issued that give the green light to the project, both the interchange and MacIntyre Road extended. Once the project's got the green light, they're going to be prepared to file a suit.
There you go. And then we'll see it. Then we'll see you in court. And then they'll call him up. Then they'll call him again. Peter, then Judge Thomas over here for Virginia Supreme Court.
Yeah, maybe this will go
Young
to the...
Young man, let's spend the next 6 minutes. Tell me your merits of your case.
Maybe this will go to the U.S. Supreme Court, Coy. Who knows?
It very well could. And then they'll probably vote to allow corporations to be people.
But go to SeavilleTomorrow.org. You can get those stories and more and sign up for our weekly updates.
There you go. Brian Wheeler, he's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. Brian, thank you for the update, my friend.
Thank you, Coy.
What are you having for dinner tonight?
I don't know, but I think it's going to be good.
Gene cooking it?
Gene's
or are you
cooking.
Picking something up on the way
Gene's
home?
Gene's cooking. Now, we're going to Danville this weekend. Gene's going to Danville, and you know what that means.
That means
she's going to come back with some of Mr. Grant's chicken salad and those little oatmeal cream pies.
Oh.
And I will tell Abby to bring you
will an you bring me one?
Oatmeal cream pie.
Abby, please bring me one. Those are awesome. And where they come from again?
Mr. Grant's whatever.
In Danville.
Market. Yeah. It's a little market tucked away off Main Street. You'd never find it. You have to have local knowledge to find this place.
One of the best yummies in Virginia.
The locals, get the chicken salad and the little oatmeal things and you'll
Good
be in
stuff.
Heaven.
Thank you, Brian.
See ya.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.